Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm John Schumann with Medical Monday. Over the last year, the COVID-19 pandemic has put pressure on all of us to socialize less, wash our hands, and wear masks. Our hospitals and healthcare systems have also seen a flurry of change as they've had to adapt to the new realities. New COVID-specific units, fewer elective surgeries, and less overall capacity for non-COVID-related illnesses because of the burden of the pandemic. Rural hospitals were already under tremendous market pressure before the pandemic. As they continue to lose market share, especially in states that have not expanded Medicaid, meaning a higher proportion of those rural residents using those hospitals are without insurance and thus have no means of payment for their health care. Over the last few years, 9 rural hospitals have shut down here in Oklahoma. And while it's arguable whether small and isolated hospitals should stay open from a business sense, there's no denying that for many small towns, they take away both an emotional sense of security and many jobs that come with them. My guest today, Sarah Jane Tribble, has looked in depth at one such closure, that of Fort Scott Mercy Hospital in rural southeastern Kansas, which shut its doors in late 2018. Over a beautifully reported 7-episode podcast called Where It Hurts, Tribble interviews town members, former hospital executives, and employees, as well as patients that used to get their care there. Season 1, which wrapped up late last year, is called No Mercy. Tribble is a senior correspondent with Kaiser Health News, which is a nonprofit news source underwritten by the Henry J. Kaiser Family Foundation. Though it shares an ancestor with the large Kaiser Permanente health system, it's completely editorially independent. I should also point out that Kaiser Health News has no relation to Tulsa's own George Kaiser Family Foundation, which underwrites KWGS, despite the same surname. Sarah Jane Tribble, senior correspondent at Kaiser Health News and creator and host of the podcast Where It Hurts, is my guest today on Studio Tulsa Medical Monday. Sarah Jane Tribble, welcome to Medical Monday. Let's start by just having you tell us about Mercy Hospital in Fort Scott. It had been around for over 100 years before it closed.
Yeah, thanks for having me. And I think this is such an important topic for everybody, even if you're not in a rural area, because this is happening across the U.S. More than 130 hospitals have closed in rural areas in the last decade, and it's really transforming these communities. Fort Scott, Kansas is in southeastern Kansas, not far from the Oklahoma or Missouri borders. And they had a hospital from 1886. Nuns came down from the north and opened up this hospital. And the community had really been involved with it over the years, helping raise money to open it, helping raise money to expand it on different occasions. But as we all know, healthcare has changed a lot in the last few decades. And those changes meant that less patients were in inpatient beds, right? Less surgeries, less reasons to stay days after the surgeries. And as the years drew on after 2000, they saw and saw less patients, and that really affected their ability to stay open.
And so the decision to close Fort Scott Mercy Hospital was one that took some time to kind of make that decision. But the bottom line was that it's from your reporting, the hospital lost over $2 million, I think, the year before it closed, and you know, about the same amount or a little bit less the year before that. So it was on a trajectory that was pretty much unsustainable, was it not?
Right. And the reason was because of the lack of patients in the beds, and they weren't getting any Medicare reimbursement. And Medicare reimbursement is vital to hospitals, especially in rural areas, because that reimbursement pays for folks who are 65 and older. And rural areas are, you know, full of people who are 65 and older. In addition, the other problem was a lack of Medicaid expansion. And I'm always a little bit hesitant to mention that up front, because a lot of people will pounce on that and say it's a reason for Medicaid to expand. And it would have helped Mercy Hospital, no doubt. The president, Rita Baker, told me that right up front. But she also said, you know, there are a host of other reimbursement issues that have happened over the years that could have helped Mercy Hospital. In particular, it had been a big hospital. It had opened at something like 65 beds. And she had decreased the number of licensed beds over the years because there weren't that many patients. And she could not get it transitioned into a new Medicare designation called critical access. That would have helped Mercy Hospital stay open, but because of federal rules, she couldn't get that change to happen either.
Do you know why she couldn't get it designated as critical access? Because if there were, I mean, one criterion is that there have to be, you know, few hospitals within many miles, right?
Yeah, within, the rule changed over the last decade, but if I recall correctly, it's roughly 25 miles from the nearest hospital. I don't swear by that, but it's something like a number of miles to the nearest hospital. And Mercy had two hospitals that could fall within that range, Nevada's hospital in Nevada, Missouri, and then the Pittsburgh, Kansas hospital down the road, which was a little over 30 miles, I believe.
Well, and you did point out, and I think it is worth pointing out, that Kansas is one of the few states remaining that has not expanded Medicaid. Of course, here in Oklahoma, we just had a referendum in 2020 where our state did, by a very close margin, vote to expand Medicaid, and we're still in the throes with this current legislative session that's about to get underway, going to figure out how we're going to be paying our 10% share, but the federal government will be matching at 90%. So we hope to vastly expand Medicaid and therefore expand healthcare access to many of our most vulnerable citizens here in Oklahoma. Sarah, you mentioned Rita Baker. You talked to her extensively, did deep reporting for this podcast. She was the CEO of Mercy Hospital and had to oversee its closure, but it's not like she was brought in to kind of cut bait, as it were. She is someone who worked at Mercy for her whole career, and I think almost 40 years or something. So this was not something she did in any lighthearted way. I mean, this was something that she was devastated by also.
I find Rita Baker to be a very compelling and strong person, character, if you will, for the podcast. When I began this reporting, my goal was to get into the hospital before it closed, and that was December 2018. And I reached out to Rita Baker and told her I was from the region. I grew up an hour south of Fort Scott, Kansas, and she allowed me to come meet with her before the hospital closed. And that was about 2 weeks before the hospital closed. During that meeting, one of the things that she told me that really struck out was that the weekend before I had arrived in town, no patients were in the beds. Not a single patient had stayed overnight. Now, you could say that's because they had decreased services in the wake of the closure, but she said an average of 9 inpatients were in the beds the previous year. But to your point, Rita Baker spent more than half her life at Mercy Hospital. She went there right out of nursing school. She grew up south of town on a farm, and she married a local man, and they raised their kids there, and they raised their grandchildren there. They had a beautiful house just down the road from the hospital. And she was a huge member of the community. She served on boards and chaired committees, and everybody in town knew her.
And in your reporting, you also talked to the city manager of Fort Scott, a guy named Dave Martin. And he was obviously, to put it mildly, disappointed that Mercy closed, because the downside of a hospital closure is, I think, there's a huge emotional component that people feel less safe not having a hospital in their community. But then the other part of it is the job loss that occurs. And he actually wound up apologizing somewhat publicly to Rita Baker. Can you tell us about that?
As the podcast series goes on, each episode introduces a person who then helps translate and bring to life that healthcare policy issue. And the idea behind it is, you may not know that you're getting health policy, but you're listening to somebody drive for their dialysis after the dialysis center shut down. And we're going to tell you about why that's such a big problem. Dave Martin I think it's fair to say he was angry. He was very angry that the hospital was closing. And that anger, as a leader in the community, influenced the thoughts of many people in the community. And everybody in the community felt betrayed and upset. This hospital had been one of the biggest employers in town for decades. And at one point, it employed, 400 or more people. And when it closed, it employed just over 250. And as a city manager, what you know from that is, one, it's a nonprofit hospital, so it's not paying property taxes. So what are you really losing? What he knew he was losing was good paying jobs. They were the kind of jobs that were rare to find in southeastern Kansas. These were office jobs or white collar jobs. These are educated employees who live in the community and contribute their disposable income to restaurants and other locations in the community. And they also are leaders in the community. And he knew with the hospital disappearing, he would lose that. In addition, I think Dave, being an avid CrossFitter, somebody who really cared about staying in shape, he's in his 60s, but he could lift lots of weights, he was worried about the health of his community. He wanted to make sure that people had access to good health care in the community as well.
You're listening to Studio Tulsa. It's Medical Monday. I'm John Schumann. And my guest today is Sarah Jane Tribble, who is a senior correspondent with the nonprofit news source Kaiser Health News. She's also the host and reporter of a fabulous podcast series called Where It Hurts. And season one just wrapped at the end of last year with the title No Mercy, a play on the fact that it was Mercy Hospital closing in Fort Scott, Kansas, there in southeast Kansas. And Sarah, I wanted to ask about another aspect of your reporting. You know, one of the losses for when a hospital closes in a community, a full-service hospital, is that one of the functions it performs is maternity services, labor and delivery. And I believe you reported that the year prior to its closure, Mercy Hospital had something like 230 births. And you interview a young woman whose first child was born at Mercy, but whose second child wasn't able to be born there because the hospital had closed. And then also, she turned out to have worked at the hospital, so lost her job. Can you comment on, in your reporting, on closures of rural hospitals, I guess particularly in Kansas? What kind of impact does this have on, you know, birth or, you know, healthy outcomes in terms of labor and delivery?
So the research shows that when a hospital closes, that people have to travel further for care. And imagine being that mother who has to worry about not only getting to the hospital safely, but getting to the hospital safely, driving down a two-lane highway where cell service drops out, and you're rushing because you're not sure if you're going to make it. And this is not an uncommon problem. The research done by academics across the U.S. has found that there are more problems with births after a hospital closes, and women are more likely to face mortality or close to lethal births if the hospital closes nearby. And this is kind of a fairly new area of research, actually, but it's not surprising because if you look at emergency services data, too, there's also more deaths that happen in areas where hospitals have closed.
Yeah, and I neglected to point out that in Fort Scott, the population is roughly around 8,000 people, right? So on the order of, and you point out in your reporting that a hospital of that size and in that size community where there's, you know, 230 births a year, that averages out to maybe two babies every 3 days, something like that, two-thirds, I guess, is just doing the ratio. So not even a baby born every day, but it's a small community, but it's the kind of place where every baby born would get its picture put on the wall, that kind of a thing. And so over the years, Mercy Hospital had several different physical presences, you know, from when it opened in the 1880s to when did its most recent renovation occur?
The early 2000s, the new massive hospital that was larger than three football fields in size opened in 2002. And it included more than $2 million raised by the community to open that hospital.
Yeah. And so that's another reason, of course, the community feels betrayed is because they've, you know, raised funds to help and donated and contributed to the nonprofit hospital. You know, another aspect of your reporting I found so interesting was that Mercy Hospital in Fort Scott was, you know, the Sisters of Mercy, if I don't know that I have the order correct, but the bottom line is it had been founded by an order of nuns. First of all, many of the order sort of died out, and you in your reporting tried to find some of the nuns. It wasn't so easy to get one of them to talk to you, but eventually you were able to. Can you tell us a little bit about that quest?
Yeah, so the very first time I went to Fort Scott in December 2018, and then every time after, I kind of kept thinking, where are the nuns? Because nuns founded the hospital, and I knew from talking to folks like Fred Campbell in episode chapter 4 on the history, the nuns had been vital parts of the hospital operations. They had led the hospital as chief executive president. They had spearheaded nursing wings and so forth. And they hired Rita Baker, actually, when she was first out of school, and she worked with the nuns. But when I was there, there were no nuns, and there was a little talk of nuns. Everybody I met, though, who was over a certain age, remembered the nuns and talked about them. There was a cemetery on one side of town, St. Mary's Cemetery, where many of the nuns were buried. There was a building that the community college owns that used to be the convent for the nuns. I went there and talked to folks there. But I also emailed the Sisters of Mercy's archival heritage group in the Carolinas, and they connected me with a sister, Anne Renee Brow, via email, and I read her book, Mercy in the Heartland, and it gave me the history of the Sisters of Mercy in the Heartland. I tried to interview Sister Anne Renee Brow, and she declined, and it was quite the journey to find her and talk to her, and that's in the podcast. In the end, the Sisters of Mercy had incorporated and became the Mercy Health System that's based out of St. Louis, Missouri. And I had been working with the Mercy Health System to get the financials and, of course, interview their executives and talk to their folks about why the hospital had closed. They had given me mostly Rita Baker to talk to, but they had answered some corporate questions as well. And so they actually reached out to me after they heard I was trying to contact Sister Anne Renee, and we arranged a meeting with Sister Rockledge. And she had kind of founded the Mercy Health System and helped bring all these hospitals underneath one corporate umbrella.
Yeah, and that was really so interesting, that interview with Sister Rockledge. And there was just one thing I really wanted to follow up with you on, because she basically says we don't regret what's been done because it's been done in good faith and good will come from this. And I guess Do you believe her? Do you feel like the hospital closure and those negotiations were done in good faith if so many people in the town felt blindsided by its closure?
It's a really interesting kind of controversy. And that is the controversy that really drew me into Fort Scott. Picture this. The first time I come to town, I'm staying at the local bed and breakfast, and my cell phone rings, and it is the Chamber of Commerce president saying that the city manager needs to talk to me. I had not contacted Dave Martin yet because I was busy trying to contact the hospital and interview them, and I had planned to contact Dave Martin. But Dave had called me because he wanted to make sure that he protected his community and shared their story about the hospital closing. So from the very first time I arrived in town, I was trying to get both sides of the story, but one side, the city, was so adamant about making sure they told their side that they reached out to me because they didn't want to miss their chance, which is great, but it also highlights the real tension that was there between the hospital and the community. And it took a lot to kind of suss out why that tension was happening, knowing that Rita Baker had been friends with all these people and had worked on committees with Dave and everybody else in the community. They felt blindsided because of the history of Mercy. And that happens, I think, with a lot of these rural hospitals. These hospitals, many of them were founded, you know, century ago or decades ago, at least during, you know, the 1950s when federal monies went out to rural America to build hospitals. And many of these hospitals were built as part of the community with the community interest. The community didn't have any say in its closure. And that was what betrayed them. That's why they got angry. They had known that the hospital was struggling. You would have had to been blind not to realize that this hospital wasn't serving as many people as it used to serve. So Rita, from her perspective, was like, I warned them. I told them. I can't believe they didn't listen to me. I went to city meetings and said, please send your employees here. Don't send them up to Kansas City for an MRI because it's cheaper on the insurance. Send them to us because we support your community. So going back to your question about the regret and the idea that they are leaving in a better place, from my reporting, what I can see is that Rita Baker left it a better place. She had worked with the Kansas Hospital Association over the years. She knew what the Kansas Hospital Association's white papers had said about what communities need. Rita had been to D.C. to lobby Congress folks about funding for the right kind of health care for rural communities. So she knew they needed emergency care. She knew they needed primary care for these higher levels of chronic illnesses in rural America. And she knew they needed new good ambulance care as well. She was hoping to get other things like the cancer center to stay and so forth, but she knew the basics. And she made sure she negotiated between Mercy Hospital and Mercy Inn St. Louis to make sure those things stayed in the community. And then she worked with people she knew in the community to make sure that those things were in the community. I don't know that that would have happened in other communities where there wasn't a Rita Baker. I think Fort Scott was very lucky to have Rita.
Yeah, it certainly seems so. And as you point out, even with the closure of the hospital, which felt devastating to so many of the people that you interviewed in the podcast, Rita Baker was able to essentially negotiate for a mixture of services. And I'm going to reintroduce you, and then I do want to ask you about things like the emergency center or the cancer center or the primary care, the community health center that remained open. You're listening to Studio Tulsa. It's Medical Monday. I'm John Schumann. And my guest today is Sarah Jane Tribble, who's a senior correspondent with Kaiser Health News. She's also the host and reporter on a wonderful podcast called Where It Hurts. And Sarah, this story is personal for you. You sort of mentioned that you grew up in Parsons, Kansas, so there's a local flavor. You also dedicate this series to your sister. Tell us about Maggie.
Maggie was just a year ahead of me in school, so we were very close in age. We grew up on a dirt road about 10 miles from town, and so we grew up together. She was my older sister. I was very sick as a child. I had a meningitis when I was a baby, so I was kind of a sickly little thing. And my older sister was kind of my world. And she got very sick. She had pancreatic cancer. And she had fought it for a couple years. But right about the time Mercy Hospital closed was right about the time my sister died. And so I was flying back for two reasons, flying back to see family and flying back to do my reporting. And that really converged for me because, you know, the people of Fort Scott were losing something, too. And they were in a lot of pain, and everybody was going through stages of grief, if you will. And I was going through stages of grief. And so as a podcast host, sometimes I would share with folks that I'm going to spend tonight over at my parents' house. And I would share that I grew up in southeastern Kansas and talk about Maggie. I didn't do it much because I'm sort of an old school journalist. The story's not about me. But this was a life-changing thing. And Maggie was very, very special. And actually, yesterday is 2 years since she passed.
Hmm. I'm sorry for your loss. She was so young to have pancreatic cancer, but it can strike at any age, and it's such a difficult thing to treat. But it added just so much resonance to your reporting as well, to hear about her story, and to have the podcast dedicated to her. I want to go back and talk about Mercy Hospital, and you mentioned about Rita Baker, and for a while there was a cancer center that remained after the hospital closed, but it didn't stick around very long. Kind of a similar story there, or was it just a matter of not having enough doctors around, or what happened there?
So the cancer center specifically, I had called their managing director in Wichita, Kansas, and what happened was Mercy Hospital had a cancer center set up inside of it, and they contracted out for their oncologist with a group out of Wichita, Kansas, and the oncologist would come in every week or so, and there was a couple of different ones that would visit. And people could come in and get their chemotherapy at this beautiful unit within the Mercy Hospital. And the nurses were employed there with Mercy Hospital and worked on contract, I believe. So they had said they were going to stay because the building actually remained open for 2 years. Mercy Health System out of St. Louis had agreed to keep it open for 2 years so that services could still be provided out of it, like the cancer center, the emergency department, and the primary care center. But within a couple of weeks after the closure, they decided to close. The cancer center decided to close. When I called, they told me that the town had changed too much. And in reality, I think it was because, as the medical community knows, people who work in medicine understand that people with cancer need constant lab work done. And often before you get your chemo done, you need lab work done. And I think there was a period of time where it was unclear whether the lab services at this hospital building would remain open after the hospital closed. And that's probably a good business reason not to keep your cancer center open. They also had other centers in nearby towns, nearby, depending on your definition of nearby, but they told me they had other centers in nearby towns. Those towns were at least an hour away, which made it hard for the Fort Scott cancer patients, but many of them traveled.
Well, was it Rita Baker herself who kind of envisioned, when you asked about what does the future hold, that Fort Scott is possibly going to become a bedroom community or could become a bedroom community of Kansas City? I didn't really understand that because it's not like the distance is actually shorter, but maybe referring to the fact that highways are better or something like that, or just that our conception of distance has changed over time?
Yeah, over the course of the year, I think a lot of people's perception of what Fort Scott would be had changed and evolved. I think initially people were devastated to the point where they thought that Fort Scott was, this was maybe a final nail in the city and whether it would thrive or not. Fort Scott has a lake right outside of it, and there is some, I guess, good internet access out there. And a lot of people will move to the lake from Kansas City or areas up north. It's a beautiful setting. And I think that there had been hope that that would happen more. The highways going into Fort Scott, it's a four-lane highway that is down from Kansas City. And it's a fairly fast drive. You just set your car, on autopilot, and it's straight down from Kansas City's airport. And it's a fast drive down. So it's not out of the question to think that somebody might want to commute from the southern suburbs of Kansas City. I don't know if that's going to happen or not, but I think that is a hope of some people in Fort Scott.
And then further, what remains in what was Fort Scott Mercy Hospital, because the building is mostly fallow, but there is something that has moved in there to kind of continue in a healthcare fashion, and it's a community health center. Tell us about what that entails and how it's slightly different or why it has a seemingly higher likelihood of surviving.
So the Community Health Center of Southeast Kansas is based in Pittsburgh, which is the next town over, about 30-some miles over. And they were kind of chomping at the bit to jump into Fort Scott because, in reality, they had plenty of patients who were coming to them from Fort Scott previously. The Community Health Center is a federally qualified healthcare center, which means it can access grants that hospitals can't access. It gets a different funding mechanism for treating patients than hospitals do, so they don't lose as much money on uninsured patients. They also like serving insured patients. They want to serve everybody in the region, and they're set up kind of to do that. They kind of jumped at the chance, as Krista Postai, the director there, told me, to move into Fort Scott. They probably would have moved in if Rita hadn't asked, but Rita did kind of coordinate that transition, and she helped them rearrange the front half of the hospital building to be a primary care clinic. And that transition happened fairly seamlessly. I think people in the community were upset because For example, Mercy Hospital didn't have a call center. They had a couple of, you know, receptionists that knew everybody in town. CHC is a big regional health clinic, and they have a small group of people who answer the phones from one location. That was a transition that folks in town had to sort of endure and get used to. So there were changes. There were some electronic health record changes that had to happen. But they did move in, and they get extra funding, like I said, for different aspects. They are paid better from Medicare and on things like primary health care coverage. And that is sort of, when you look at the data out of Bourbon County, where Fort Scott is based, that is what they need. Folks need the sort of basic everyday care, helping them with their diabetes, helping them with smoking cessation, helping them live a healthier lifestyle. There's a need for that in that community.
So Sarah, after all of this reporting that you've done, it seems like if you take some of the emotional sting out of it from the long history and the personal connection that so many Fort Scottians have with Mercy, there are services that are in place, and arguably, given the trajectory of the hospital in the years prior to its closing, the census was so low, there was such low utilization that I think on an economic sense, there maybe wasn't a great need for an acute care hospital. I mean, how do you put it all together in the end?
I think the big challenge for rural communities across the country is letting go of the past and what occurred. If you listen to the podcast, you'll hear Fred Campbell, the town historian, talk about being in the hospital after his tonsils were out. And it's a really lovely picture of what healthcare was and could be. But the reality of what healthcare is today, as we all know, is we go home and we can take medications at home that we never could have taken 30 years ago. And I think over the course of the year of the reporting, what I saw was people trying to get used to this idea of how healthcare needs to shift. And that included the city manager, Dave Martin. And the healthcare clinic model is something that if you go to experts across the country, they say is something that could be used in every community. In fact, in the latest coronavirus stimulus package passed by Congress in December, there was a bill that Senator Grassley, Chuck Grassley out of Iowa, had been working on for ages. He's a Republican. He had been pushing something called REACH. It turned into the Rural Emergency Hospital Act and was put into that stimulus package, and it was approved. And what that does is create a new kind of hospital for rural America, a hospital that doesn't need inpatient beds. Now, there still needs to be rulemaking and comments and so forth. We don't know how much money that would be for these hospitals. But what it would do, it would create a new Medicare designation of a hospital that's emergency care and primary care. So across Kansas and other states, you could look to this rule and start kind of reevaluating what your community really needs. Is it sad you can't have a baby in Fort Scott? Yeah, it's sad. Is it dangerous? Yeah, it's a bit dangerous. Can you work around it? Fort Scott's finding a way to do it, and lots of communities already were finding a way to do it. So from a reporting standpoint, I can't fairly write a story of tragedy and loss, because there are things in place and lessons to be learned on how rural America can sort of overcome this major flaw, which is not having a hospital. Maybe they just need to change their definition on what a hospital is. I want to pause because it sure would be nice for Karen Endicott Coyne to have a cancer center nearby where she could travel to every week, and the other cancer patients in Fort Scott. And it sure would be nice to have a baby there. Nobody's given up hope on that. But at the same time, if we could just kind of save the essentials that are there, that would be good too.
Sarah, thank you so much for joining us.
John, thank you so much for having me. I'm really glad you liked the podcast.
Sarah Jane Tribble is a senior correspondent for Kaiser Health News and host and reporter of the new podcast, Where It Hurts. You can download it on any podcast platform. Well, that's our show for this Medical Monday. Studio Tulsa is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of KWGS or the University of Tulsa. For Studio Tulsa, I'm John Schumann with Medical Monday. Thanks for listening, and please stay safe out there.